Section 3, North Carolina Awakens. As you read, look for double disasters that led to the construction of a new Capitol building in Raleigh. More balanced representation between East and West with the constitutional reforms of 1835. Gains and losses in suffrage and political leadership by different groups after 1835. Accomplishments and controversies of President Andrew Jackson, and the following terms: suffrage, Democratic Party, Whig Party. In 1831, the Capitol building in Raleigh burned down. The fire destroyed almost all the contents of the 1795 structure, including a statue of George Washington. People were so discouraged that some suggested it was not worth keeping Raleigh as the capital. Residents of Fayetteville encouraged such talk, for they argued that moving the capital to their busy town would help everyone. Then much of Fayetteville burned down. That was the last time Fayetteville had a chance to become the state capital. Instead, the state laid a cornerstone for a new capital in Raleigh in 1833, and workers roofed it in 1840. The handsome granite building with its copper dome is still the North Carolina state capital. East versus West. The double disasters caused many state leaders to rethink North Carolina's situation. Citizens were leaving because of lack of opportunity and disgust with state leadership. The old 1776 Constitution set up representation by county, regardless of its size or population. Because the East had always had more counties, it had more votes in the legislature. What's more, only men who owned at least 50 acres of land could vote for the candidates for state senate. In some counties, the land ownership provision eliminated one-third of the voters. Because the governor was elected by the legislature, he had little power. The East wanted to keep the control it had gained during the Regulation period. Its citizens were more prosperous because they lived closer to markets on the coast. They liked low taxes and made fun of efforts by Western leaders like Murphy to get the state to do more. This continued even after the census of 1830 showed that the East had fewer people than the West, but many more representatives in the legislature. Sectionalism still mattered more than state to many North Carolina leaders. It was no wonder that little was accomplished. Legislator David L. Swain argued that the state needed a radical change in the form of representation. Swain was so powerful a voice for change that the legislature elected him governor 3 years in a row, quite an accomplishment for someone barely above the age of 30 who was from the West. After more than a half dozen attempts to get the legislature to call for a constitutional change, the West rebelled. As Charles Fisher of Salisbury promised, "We of the West would follow the example of the state of Franklin and create another state." Fisher gained allies in some eastern counties when the free black men there began to vote in larger numbers. Black voters sometimes were the margin of victory in places like New Bern and Halifax. Tidewater leaders specifically wanted to change that particular loophole in the old form of government. The Constitutional Convention of 1835. The state's voters went to the polls in 1835 to decide whether to hold a constitutional convention that would address the problems. Almost to a voter, the West said yes, and almost to a voter, the East said no. In fact, the votes changed dramatically from one side of the fall line to the other. However, since the West by that time had more people, the ayes had it. The best leaders from both East and West came to Raleigh in 1835 to amend the 1776 Constitution. They honored the aging Nathaniel Macon by making him chairman. However, the real leaders of the Constitutional Convention were Westerner David Swain and Easterner William Gaston. Swain was from Asheville and Gaston was from New Bern. The greatest need was to make representation fair across the state. After long debate, the delegates compromised. Each county would still have at least one representative in the House, but more populous counties would have multiple representatives. The more people a county had, the more legislators it sent to Raleigh. This immediately cheered the West. In return, the West agreed that the state senate would be apportioned by wealth. In other words, the wealthier a county was, the more senators it got. The East was happy with this because the East contained most of the expensive land and the majority of the slaves. The compromise set up a balance of power between the two sections of the state for the first time. As for the governor, the new amendments allowed the voters to elect him directly instead of letting the legislature choose him. The governor was to serve a 2-year term and could only be reelected once during a 6-year period. Gaston and others argued that the governor would become more of a voice of the people at large, bringing them closer to state government. Not all of the reforms, however, resulted in more people getting to vote. Because the writers of the 1776 Constitution never considered that free black men might vote, such men of color had been able to go to the polls. This was forbidden in the 1835 amendments. Suffrage, the right to vote, was also taken away from Native Americans such as the Lumbee. Because the Senate continued to be set up according to wealth, the 50-acre provision for voting was kept. The convention did open up political leadership to more religious groups. The 1776 Constitution had allowed only Protestant Christians to hold office. The new amendments removed the restriction from Catholics, but still denied Jews and atheists, those who do not believe in God, the right to hold office. The new amendments were submitted to the state's voters for approval. They passed by a vote of 26,771 to 21,606. The vote continued to follow sectional lines. Only 2,327 Easterners supported the changes. Only 3,280 Westerners opposed them. Because the balance of population had shifted more to the West, the amendments were approved. With the 1836 election, North Carolina was governed in the new way. Reform and the Nation. The reforms passed in North Carolina were part of a broader national movement to change how government worked. State after state in the 1830s tried different ways to better the lives of more of its citizens. So did the federal government in Washington, D.C. The policies of former North Carolinian Andrew Jackson made as many enemies as friends. Jackson built up the Democratic Party during his terms as president from 1829 to 1837. Those who disliked Jackson, who often called him King Andrew because he was so assertive as president, formed the Whig Party to oppose him. Andrew Jackson strongly supported families who moved west to farm. For example, he made it easier for families to buy federal lands, and he worked to lower their federal taxes. He also used federal money to help establish banks in western states, so families would have an easier time borrowing money to get started on a new life. One of the reasons some people disliked him was his tendency to veto any law passed by Congress that he thought was not in the interest of the common man. The most famous was his veto of the Bank of the United States, the first attempt in the nation to have a centralized monetary system. Like Nathaniel Macon, Jackson thought the state, not the nation, should decide where there should be banks.